Zell, so you know that I moved 5 days. It took us to move one street down.
Wow.
I finally finished at about between 7 and 8 last night. The four cats, one of them we had to put down. Jerry's no longer with us. Ooh, he was terminally ill.
Jerry was a real fighter.
Yeah. But Salty is a fighter. Well, he thinks he's a fighter. Never known a male feline to take so many beatings. So eventually settled them in the early hours of the morning, only to be woken at about 3:30 with this howling. I got out to the front. I don't know if it was Uckers or Dobbo who were on the wall, but they were battered. It was Salty.
Oh.
His ear was bitten, a big chunk of fur out. And just for a moment, I thought either the Bulls were in Cape Town or the Stormers had taken an early flight back, the Concorde, to get back to Cape Town. But I had to calm Salty, and I must say he had the look of Dobbo. Humiliated, embarrassed. And I looked at him, I said, but you picked this fight. Dobbo, you picked that team. So,
look, the difference
you,
is, mate,
look at you all quiet.
The difference is, mate, that Salty's not going to win this week either, mate.
Salty's never winning. And I try to explain that to him as well. Stay in the backyard and actually just enjoy it. Salty needs to play in the SA Cup, not in the Adventure Champions Cup. Okay. So,
all says to move, mate. That's incredible. Well done.
It's incredible. I had a lot of stuff. Hey? You can't believe how much you accumulate in one place. But it's all done and all dusted. Unlike the campaigns of the South African teams in the Investec Champions Cup, it was like a lotto weekend. I mean, great rugby. Big, big numbers. Big numbers.
Big numbers.
9 from 12 I scored. You scored 7 from 12. And if you ask me to make those picks again, the only one I would change is I wouldn't put my patriotic local bias in a Stormers second string outfit and look at the prem form of a team that was conceding 41 points on average in their 8 defeats out of 9 games. I would have gone with my head, not my heart, and said, it's going to be a tough one for the Stormers to win. But nowhere ever would I have thought they concede 61 points. And also, nowhere ever did I think I'd see a Bulls team concede 61 points at Loftus with that kind of Springbok material in it. It's not the most points they've ever conceded. That's the good news for those guys. That was in 2017 against the Crusaders, 62-24, 10 tries the Crusaders scored. But 61 is the second most, and the 46 against Bordeaux a month ago is the third most in terms of, well, the second most in terms of the Investec Champions Cup and anything in Europe. When you summarize the South African performances this weekend, thank God it's Monday.
I thought the Lions were fantastic, mate.
They and the EPC are.
Yeah. Now, look, obviously not a great bunch of results. And like you say, we didn't just lose. Teams shipped plenty of points in those losses. And very much a situation that I think all the teams obviously want to recover from and recover from quickly. And definitely, I would say that the South African teams are very much in the finding out what does and doesn't work in the Champions Cup phase of our introduction into Europe. So... lots of room for improvement, obviously. Improvement in team performances is vital, I suppose, to bounce back. And I suppose the proof will be in the eating of the pudding as the Stormers play Leicester at home and need to win that game to advance to secure their place in the Champions Cup round of 16. And hopefully it's home playoffs. So there is an opportunity to bounce back and make things right. But certainly an opportunity missed. And I think for the Bulls, some holes that need patching. Some big holes.
Bulls are gone. The Bulls are gone. We showed them love last week. Never again.
They may not be gone, mate. They may qualify for the Challenge Cup and then win the Challenge
Cup. Yes, or they could win the Challenge. In terms of the Investec Champions Cup, they're gone. They're going to go to Power. They're going to take a big one. Power's a good side. They're second in the top 14. When they pick their full strength side at home, they're outstanding. They went to Scarlets. They took a strong side to Scarlets, scored 47 points. I didn't think that's the one of the three I got wrong. I had Scarlets at home to beat them. I thought they would send the second string side. They didn't. They've played some exciting rugby. When I was in London chatting to their guys as well, they said, we play with pace. We play like seven-star rugby and at home. It's a great little city to visit. But there's not a hostile crowd. There's a carnival crowd. And we like to entertain them and play that kind of rugby. So they were outstanding. Bordeaux, wow. Bordeaux at home kind of looked like watching a very good Springbok performance at Newlands.
Mate,
it looks like that kind of that intimacy in the stadium, crowds close to the players, 50 points to 14 up with like 10 minutes to go. Beautiful game. Pollock got two tries, really annoyed the Bordeaux crowd. But just looking at their pack, which is so underrated, the Bordeaux pack, and then looking at their backs, and I think as a back division, they've got the best back division in that competition. Bioberry, those two centres, Jelibet, Peno, that Fijian fullback who was a player of the match, I can't pronounce his surname, and then Luca wasn't even playing. Jelibet didn't even kick for Poles, and they still put 50 points past them. So anyone who's going to go there in the playoffs, do you know what? Don't get on a plane. defending champions, and they played like defending champions. They went to Loftus in the first round. They conceded 33 points in the first half. They kept the Bulls scoreless in the second half, and they won 46-33. That's when they put down their mark and said, we're coming to defend this title. And their biggest foe, Toulouse, have surprisingly dropped two away games in the league. That means they won't host the last 16 or last 8. They will be on the road now till those finals in the north of Spain in the last week of May. And that is one of the great, great surprises of this year's Investor Champions Cup, is to see Toulouse get beaten in Scotland and then the north of England. I thought Saracens dogged. Atoje, Jamie George, Owen Farrell, the big guns.
But you had an inkling, mate. You called them to win it. You had a feeling about Saracens. I will also tell the viewers that you had a feeling that the Stormers weren't going to win this weekend.
But I wasn't allowed to say it.
So you were on the money there, mate. Your instincts were correct. And I think Saracens are now in the pound seats, potentially. It's going to be a very interesting knockout phase of the Champions Cup because there are a couple of teams that are there and thereabouts. And once you get into knockout phase and you're playing home or away, it's going to be a bloodbath. So looking forward to that.
Look, I said it ad nauseum yesterday, wrote it on the blogs about the Stormers. I would never pick the Stormers side, not with defensive coach Norm Laker there, to concede 61 points, not against the struggling Harlequins side. What we had to give Harlequins is they got a letter from the owners to say, shape up or ship out. You're going to get your contracts cut.
Yeah, you guys
are great. To the coach, you're on your way out.
Yeah.
And the thing, and I don't need you to comment on it on a side that you're involved in, but as an observer looking in, it's like they just never got – Ben Jason Dixon aside, I thought he was outstanding in such a losing cause. It was like he was one man against 23, okay? The rest just didn't look like they got off the plane.
Mm.
And I don't blame them in terms of their individual quality. A lot of them haven't played for a while. It's the first time they're playing together as a combination. But in this case, I just thought the coaching staff got it wrong. If you had sent a more balanced mixed and match – to a Harlequin side under the pump, I have no doubt the Stormers would have won that game. And I have no doubt that whoever they pick here in a mix and match in front of 30,000 at the DHL Stadium will beat Leicester.
Mm.
So they had the potential to end that league phase top of the table, which guarantees you a last 16. Win that, it guarantees you a last 8. Commercially, huge money. I just felt Dobber's got so many things right. I just felt this is one he got very, very wrong in his planning. And not necessarily reading the mood of the competition and defaulting to the stereotype of send the second stringers. If they get a bonus point, that's a bonus.
Mm.
And our best team will definitely win at home and we'll advance. Now they're in the position they have to get 5 points to end second because they can't end first.
Mm.
And they've got to hope that La Rochelle picks their strongest team and does Harlequins.
And so what I will say to people watching the show is this isn't your reaction to this. You were saying this last week already. This isn't a knee-jerk reaction to a result. This is something that you were already talking about last week. And I think it's a very interesting point. That's why I said at the top of the show, there is an element of learning about this competition and what does and doesn't work, juggling two competitions. You know, the flip side of that is that you can't be fielding your second stringers in home games when you're trying to draw a crowd, potentially saying, hey, we need to play our stars at home. There's a commercial element to that too, I suppose. But I think your point's valid. I mean, I think it's better to have a 50% chance of winning on the road and a 50% chance of winning at home than a 0% chance of winning on the road and a 100% chance of winning at home. Because you're only ever going to max out at one win. So I quite like your thinking around that. I haven't given a lot of thought, but I think there's some merit to that. And like you say, no matter who you really play in Cape Town, you'd expect the Oaks to lift themselves with the support of 45,000 people and get stuck in hammer and tongs to whoever comes here.
I'm not talking A and B sides now. I'm talking a greater balance.
No, no. Totally.
Now, if you look at that Stormer side that went there, if there was just two or three bigger name players in that pack, I think it would have been vastly different. And maybe an Ungure at nine in terms of that mongrel, that youthfulness. And they started well. They could still get away with poxing a win there, getting 4 points. If you look at that side that went to Bayonne, it wasn't a B team, it wasn't an A team. It was pretty much taking, it was a very well-selected side to get that kind of result that they got against Bayonne, playing very intelligent rugby. They didn't fire a shot at the Stoop. They didn't fire a shot there 2 years ago when they did the same thing and took a kind of three or four first-team players, led by Samuel Marat back then, and then a lot of fringe players, and they got poleaxed. They were 6-0 up. It was 53-9, and then J.C. Maher scored in the 78th minute. Now, what lessons were learned from there? Not too many. And again, I just feel that you go there, you win that game, you come back, and you go, okay, what do we need to? We've already qualified. We're in the top three. We're going through to the last 16. What do we need to do to actually finish one or two? And your destiny is in your own hands. Now it's all these different permutations. And that's how quickly the game changes. They got on a plane on Friday, on the Thursday, and everyone's like, rah, 10 matches unbeaten. Quins have won one in their last nine. They've lost eight. 41 points on average they conceded, and they just took 61 points in their last Prem game. They're on their way out. Maybe the Stormers got ahead of themselves. I definitely got ahead of myself in thinking that there wasn't enough quality outside of those big guns. And what you spoke about earlier is the biggest lesson in this competition is back your big guns to go on the road and win, and back your squad depth to win at home. And if you look at Bordeaux, they took their big guns to the big games. Leinster took their big guns to the big games. Saracens missed a trick by not bringing three of their big guns to Durban, and they lost the game. Toulouse, even though they lost those two games against Glasgow and Saracens, it was their best team that they could field. Toulon took their best team, got knocked over by Edinburgh, but it was a close game. Munster took their best team. Bath took their best team to cast, got the win. Now, that's what I keep on saying. If the Sharks are taking their best team to Manchester, best kind of available, resting a couple of players, knowing that you want them back in South Africa, and the Stormers have done that, I have no doubt we'd be talking about the Hollywood Bet Sharks winning in Manchester and the Stormers getting 4 points at least
in London.
In southwest London.
Yeah.
And the manner of the Stormers' defeat was hell of a disappointing for a side that prides themselves on defense, that prides themselves on kind of being in the fight all the time. But not for the first time. The Sharks, they did it last year. They've done it this year. They've given up games that you just feel if they just sent a stronger team, they were more than capable of winning.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think the Sharks and even the Bulls could have won their games. You know, it was a massive shootout at Loftus. But the Bulls were in it at the end there. They had an opportunity to do it. Probably a lack of maybe some self-belief, a little bit of belief issue there. But the Bulls were still in that game at the end, despite shipping 61 points. They could have won it as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's difficult to put your finger on all of it at the same time. But
talk to me about the Sharks.
Yeah,
you backed, and maybe there was also a patriotic thing that you backed the Sharks to go and beat the Sale Sharks in the Battle of the Sharks, and who was going to be Tuna. It's all fun and games, like I said. It's all theater.
I got to be honest, mate. I don't really rate the Prem as a competition, which is probably going to surprise quite a few people, but I think it's a good competition. I think it's technically very solid, but physically, I expect our teams to assert themselves against teams in the Prem, and it surprises me when they don't. And there's obviously something when you cross the equator, something happens. You know, that travel factor is a real thing. I think the complete change in season is a thing, and I think that some of the logistics around playing on a Sunday, short weeks, long weeks, where you train, all that stuff, I think maybe factors into it more than into the URC, which seems to be a bit more of a robotic thing. So, yeah, the Sharks, I think there's signs of improvement there. I think the Sharks are going to bounce back. It's about how long is it going to take. I thought that there were elements of that game that they did well. But defensively, the Sharks, Bulls, and Stormers all tackled sub 70% this weekend, which is obviously not good enough. And South Africa, it's concerning because South African teams are traditionally renowned for being physical and for being defensively minded. And I think maybe there's something in it that our teams have kind of fallen in love with the game that we know at the top levels doesn't win you championships. It may score you some great tries, but doesn't necessarily win you championships. And I think there's maybe an opportunity to revert to some traditional strengths of South African rugby to get us back onto the straight and narrow.
Look, I hear your talk about travel equates a 2-hour, 1-hour time difference. Mm. But you said it last week. It's easier to go from playing in 35 degrees to playing in 1 degree.
Totally.
Than playing in 1 degree to coming to playing 35 degrees.
Yeah.
Now, the Sharks look comfortable playing in those dire conditions in Manchester. It was 7-3 at halftime. Again, it's hard to play a game where your 10 is so far back in the pocket.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to get any gains from their backs. The Boogeyman was playing well. Made a lot of impact. But right now, the quality of the squad isn't there that a JP Peterson can make 14 changes to his starting lineup and go to Manchester and expect to win.
Mm.
Yes, expect to be competitive and show some fight. And they showed fight against the Lions, 50-0 down. They were leading 22-18, coughed it up. They certainly showed fight in that game, 26-10. And Sale were under the pump. They were struggling at times. But that's what I think my frustration was, that you guys could have won that game with a better side. Mm. Stormers, you could have got that win with a better side. I think the thing that I just don't know is the Bulls couldn't have put a better side out in terms of who was available. Mm. Kane and Moody, Kirtley, Orenser, Cam Honeycomb.
Sure.
Yes, they are injured. But you pick 7 Springboks and what people believe is one of the form 8s in your pack, Rudolph, and he's not the Springbok. You pick a Springbok 9, Ambrose Papeete, and you pick a double World Cup winner, Andre Pollard at 10. And there's about 3 scrums in the first 40 minutes. Walker Lowe did more meters, I think, than most winners do. And it showed.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it?
It's like, even when they went 21-0 down, they got into that sevens game with Bristol, and Bristol just thought it was manna from heaven. It was, they thought they were just in a sweet shop. And the word out of the Bristol camp is that when Pat Lamb thought that they had punched themselves out on 35 minutes, asked the players at halftime, can you do this? Are you in this game for this 40 minutes? They said it's so easy out there. It's so easy to break these guys down. And it was. If you go and look, they scored 9 tries and they made 18 line breaks. So every second line break led basically to a try.
Insane. Yeah. So, I mean, that comes back to the point that I was saying about playing to South Africa's traditional strengths. You know, I think this Ackers trying to play Lions rugby in Pretoria is a bit like if Ackers are trying to play Bulls rugby in Joburg. Like, he didn't have the guys to do that. And I gave him a lot of credit at the time for the way the Lions played, because that was getting the most out of that group of players. It was the cleverest rugby for that unit to play. They couldn't beat you up in the gain line. They couldn't win the collisions with consistency, but they could outrun you. They could outwork you, and they could kind of give you what you thought was an early lead, and you run yourself out, and then they just reel you in and overtake you just on pure conditioning and work effort. So if you're going to have Walker Lowe in your pack and play east to west, then there's no point having that guy in your pack. He is definitely a north-south guy. Keep it close to the forwards, scrum, clean, be physical, be direct, get over the gain line, and then send it to Oaks, and when you send it, you must score, I would think. But the thing that concerned me the most about the Bulls was that the guys that were sort of guilty of conceding that early lead were the Springboks. It was unforced errors by Andre, Vili, Wilco Lowe. That's where Bristol got going. And I just wonder, you know, with the big changes in the coaching setup, I wonder how many of those returning Boks were effectively coaches in the last 2 weeks, you know? I just wonder, I don't know. I feel like those guys need to get their heads back into it in terms of playing.
You sent me an interesting screenshot during the Bulls game. Mm. You said you want to know why Bristol's scoring? 4 players watching a Bristol player in front of the ball.
Yeah. They attack the short side. You've got four defenders marking a Bristol player who's in front of the ruck. So he's out of the game. They can't pass him the ball. Scrum off makes one pass, takes four Bulls defenders out. So where the Bulls had a 5-on-4 defensively, they went from a 5-on-4 defensively to a 1-on-3. And then they just made one skip pass, cut the line inside, try time.
Now, the layperson sitting at home says, hang on a second. How can these guys never miss a tackle for the Springboks? How can they look so dogged, so determined, so manic in defense? Here they're so passive, clueless, indecisive. And okay, like, hey man, that is, I think, what's troubling people when we look at the Bulls. You score 49 points at home and you still lose a game with so many current Springboks in your setup, 10 of them.
Mm.
Something must be rotten there. We keep on saying that.
Mm.
You know, Akers says, I sound like a broken record. We've got to fix it ourselves. That's seven straight defeats in all competitions now, and half of them at home, where they've conceded on average 40, 45 points.
Mm.
You take the way they started against Bordeaux, 7-0 down, 7-0, 14-7 down. They're already under the pump, chasing the game. The Lions, 24-0 after 15 minutes. Four tries they conceded. They gave up the bonus point try within 20 minutes. It was 21-0 after 8 minutes at Loftus. And then Bristol had their bonus point try on 24th minute. I thought, how can a South African team do that? Then the next day at the Stoop, it was 23 minutes. I think the Stormers had given up a bonus point try. But there were 15 Stormers sitting back in Cape Town. That's the only saving grace from that game. The A team was waiting, feet up, watching it with aircon. But in Pretoria, how long are the people willing to listen to the narrative of we'll fix it, it's ours to fix? And who is accountable? Is it the players who are stuffing up every week? Is it a system issue? Is it a coaching thing?
Mm.
Is the mix not right there? Is the mix of player not right necessarily with a coach?
Mm. Yeah, so I mean, those are all great questions. I can't answer any of them definitively. My estimation, my perception, my guesstimate is that the Bulls are playing the wrong game, number one. Number two, they have to bring in a heavyweight defense coach to fix the defense. Number three, if I can see it from where I am, all those Bok players can see it way more clearly and saw it a long time ago. And there's only so much they can do to fix some of those things. And I think definitely in terms of the on-field performance, those Bok players can produce more. But you also have to look at that in the reality and the context of, if this is a broken thing, nobody needs to be a martyr, you know, sacrifice themselves so that the Bulls lose by 40 points rather than 60 points. And there might be an air of resignation among some of those Bok players. I don't know. You know, maybe they're looking at it, they're saying, look, we tried our best to try and fix things here, but the decisions are not being made to bring in the people that need to make this most significant. I don't know. That's my guess. But definitely, I would say the Bulls need to shift to something that's more pragmatic, that fits their roster better, their best players better, and they need to bring in somebody who can rectify that defense al pronto.
But you know, when we were chatting pre the opening round, when I was at the launch at the Lansbury in southwest London, Dion Ferry said it. He was a bit annoyed that when they spoke about potential semi-finalist winners, South African teams weren't mentioned. Well, the likes of Lawrence Dallaglio said he still likes the Stormers and can't understand why the Sharks don't get it right going there. They traditionally were a team that loved to travel. They did more than just go and play a game of rugby. They would kind of be good tourists. They would embrace the challenge of being away from home. Mm. They, in many respects, played better out of Durban than they did in Durban. No humidity, no slippery ball. They kind of got it together. And then he said, when you look at the Bulls squad, and you, the draw, to get Bordeaux at home, first up, and then to get Bristol at home, it was kind of written for them to go through with the squad that they got.
Mm.
And it's like they've pushed the self-destruction button there because they've given every visiting team basically a 20-point start before they've got into the game. And I agree with Akers afterwards when he said Bristol looked out on their feet by 35 minutes.
Totally.
I thought that by 42 they'd punched themselves out and they were playing it down.
I remember.
But equally, the Bulls looked as finished. And in the last 10 minutes, the stronger team was Bristol more than the Bulls. You said there was a chance they score down the down they did the counter attack the left flank. He gets the ankle tap. He doesn't. It's a 5-point game with 2 minutes to go, and then it's helter skelter. I consistently kept on texting you and a few other guys saying, I still think the Bulls are in this game. I think these guys could be out by 60 minutes. Nothing in the legs. It reminds me of when the Cats played against the Crusaders in Nelson. They were 36-6 up at halftime. Andre Markov was the coach. And that's the Cats who were up at halftime. But they played same side. They didn't have the conditioning to do that. And they lost 56-36. And you spoke to the players a month later, and they said another 10 minutes, we lost 86-36. So when the legs go, the legs go. And I thought that would happen to Bristol. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because the Bulls didn't apply common sense. 65 minutes played. They get a penalty on their own quarter line. They tap and go. Just kick it down 60 meters. No, take the line out, slow it down, and make Bristol make some tackles. But there were 77 tackles missed in that game. And Bristol missed 50 of them.
But I think that's a prevailing thing in rugby players' minds. So we spoke about it last week with yellow cards. Okay, you're playing rugby. The team that you're playing against, they concede a yellow card. Now you have to quickly change your plan to take advantage of the numerical advantage. That gives great insight into the way that people in rugby look at the game. Because if you had a plan that you were convinced was going to break down 15 players, that plan would be immensely more effective, you would think, against 14. There is no need to change your plan. And so it's the same with like what you just said there about the quick tap when you're down by points. I'm not saying you can never score tries from tempo, and there are opportunities that you could take it. And it's not a yes, it's not binary. It's not like you must always do this because it always works. It's about probability. And I think the players, especially that come from rugby schools that play that kind of way, associate attack and tempo with scoring more points. And I think probably if you talk to the Lions that Akers made famous, they love that. Because when teams came to Ellis Park and tried to play more rugby because the pitch was conducive to it, the turnovers that came out of that is what fed the Lions' attack. And so the high fault thing, I feel like we've lost our edge there in South Africa because we think that the high fault factor is going to win the game for us. But because we don't control the key facets of the game, we end up having to do high-speed meters and acceleration and get the heart rate up to put fires out that should never have started. If we just do the fundamentals well on the high fault and we create pressure through that, the other team is going to be doing the high-speed meters to put out fires at high altitude where they're not used to playing. And then the high fault factor is going to be in your favor. But I think we're trying to create too much opportunity instead of just leaning into our physical superiority, which is disappearing because we're playing away from it.
If you look at the Bulls for now, you're the data specialist. You're the kind of trend specialist. You're the guy who crunches numbers to make sense of it. You don't just give the raw data to a coach and say, 20 missed tackles. You kind of explain why there's 20 missed tackles. The Bulls on average are between 25 and 30% missed tackles a match. What is the accepted norm for a professional team that's competitive and normally successful? Is it accurate to say your defensive thing is around 90%?
No. So in the old days, in the Jacques Nienaber Wall of Newlands days, you'd be looking at mid to high 80s, even 90s. You'd say that's pretty much what you're aiming for. The game has changed defensively in the sense that now it's about line speed and putting pressure on opponents. So if I can rush up and force you to step inside and play back to where you came from, even though I've missed that tackle, that is a success for us. So last season, the Storm was at a very low tackle efficiency, but their line speed was high. And that is a common denominator amongst teams that defend like that. People are pushing on line speed and being aggressive on defense, and they're taking risks there. And so the missed tackles rate goes up. So the tackle efficiency stat doesn't mean what it used to mean. But it shouldn't be below, once you start dipping below the 80s, you start hitting into the 70s, mid-70s and down, that is a cause for concern. As long as you're sort of high 70s, low 80s, you're in the mix there. But I think the real issue there is not so much the missed tackles percentage, is how the Bulls put themselves in situations where those tackles are being missed. So there are massive alignment issues at the Bulls, it seems to me, looking from the outside in. The distribution of the defenders is not where it needs to be. And then in some cases, it's just completing the tackle. So people always used to say defense or tackling is about attitude. And I think maybe some of the other issues at the Bulls which have led to those defeats are maybe pulling away a little bit from the attitude that you need to be an efficient defender. So I think it's a combination of multiple things. I don't think you just say, well, its tackle efficiency needs to improve. It does need to improve, but that's probably downstream from some of the catalyst issues there.
Would you say that it is an attitude issue with the when a team concedes 45 points on average at home and they're down 21-0 every match in the first 5, 6 minutes, 10 minutes, and they're missing a lot of one-on-one tackles, regardless of whether the guys step in and all that. But if you look at Bristol, and they themselves said it's just too easy. Every time they had the ball, you just felt they've created so much space and width that they could score here. And we just look clueless. We, as in the Bulls, looked clueless because it seems so unstructured, yet it was very structured. Quick hands, good step, not that confrontational, stereotypical, I'm going to run into you. And we just looked so lost. And it was just too easy. They didn't really have to work for their tries. Go through 5, 6 minutes of attack, 18, 19 phases. It was one step, one line break, and boom. Or an intercept, and boom.
True. I think I think the breakdown has definitely got something to do with it. I think for a long time, we've been able to get away with light breakdowns and playing to width. And I think teams are challenging South African sides now around the breakdown, and they're forcing South African teams to make decisions about how many people they're sending to that breakdown because they're having a go there to try and disrupt it. And I think maybe improved efficiency at the breakdown will definitely help our attack. And I think if our attack improves, our defense is going to be in better situations because we're not going to be conceding turnovers. We're not going to be kicking on the other team's terms. We're going to be kicking on our terms. And so everything starts to find a little bit more alignment and efficiency if you start to do that. I think the breakdown has been a key issue for us in Europe, in the Champions Cup and in the Challenge Cup. I think that's where we play teams that we're not always as familiar with as we are in the URC. And remember, it used to be like that in Super Rugby as well. We went through phases. If you look at the Springboks during the Rudolph Straly era, I think it was, we used to have situations where we had zero rucks. There was nobody at the breakdown. You had 14 guys waiting for the ball. But they didn't get it because all that happened was the defender sent in an oak to spoil that breakdown, create chaos. The scrum officer's having to turn to go get the ball, and then it's a nightmare. Everything that happens after that is definitely playing into the defense's hands. So I think that's where we need to improve. If we start sorting out our breakdown across the board, and again, that comes from how you play on attack, right? If you're more physical and direct and you get over the gain line, it's the defense that are having to solve issues instead of you trying to play with ball that is not ideal. So South Africa gets back to its traditional strengths at club level, go forward first. And I keep talking about rugby not being a game that you can play in parallel. It's a serial circuit. You have to do A before B before C. If you try and do C before you've done A and B, it's a mess. Let's get back to doing A and B, and then C will look great.
A question that people have asked me, why can the Springboks be so dominant, so brutal, and defensively so good? But our club teams, specifically the four that play in the URC and three in the Investec Champions Cup, are not on that level. Would you say it's as simple as coming down to quality of player that Rossi Rasmus has in a match 23 as opposed to the quality of player in 23 that are playing for each of the respective clubs?
No, I don't think so, because their opponents, you know, I think their opponents are in a similar situation. So the South African, look, the Springboks are the best team in the world, and by some margin, I would say. But you saw what happened to them at Eden Park. So little details can change the outcome of a game very quickly, and attitude and mindset and preparation can change everything. I think what's also massively different is that at the box, you get there, you know how many games you're playing in the season, Russie's got the plan for the season, and there's an abundance of depth at every single position. And so you don't have a situation where guys are coming back from the Springboks, they have to be rested for a certain period of time, these guys are available, that guy's out, you're kind of having to patch holes along the way. So there's much more continuity and sort of order, I would say, in the BOC season than there potentially is at the Bulls when you're trying to prep for playing Connacht at home this week and next week you're in France playing a French team for your survival in the Champions Cup. But having said that, I think the BOC, because of Rossi, have a lot more clarity around exactly what they're doing, what works, what doesn't work. And I think probably at the BOC, as much as everybody will say that there's and there is buy-in in that squad, I think Rossi is in charge and makes the final decision on things and is probably less collaborative than at some of the club teams that you'll find around the world where is probably more player driven. So I think all of those things, you know, it's two very different jobs. I suppose it's the difference between coaching the Lions and coaching the Bulls. If you coach in the box, your objectives and your opportunities with your players are different. You don't have them for as long in the season. But I think there's a little bit more order, and you can be a much stronger shot caller there, because it's, do you want to play for South Africa or not? Whereas in the club situation, I think it's more fluid. It's probably a bit more player driven. And that creates a bit of more inconsistency, I would say.
Do you think we'll see a mind shift change in next season, 2027? Because that's going to determine who plays in the World Club Championship in 2028. And regardless of what people may say, is where do you slot this thing into the global calendar? That's not quite global, the all-year-round rugby. But commercially, there is so much money in that competition. Mm. Commercially, there's so much money in the Investec Champions Cup. Now, the money to be made from hosting a last 16, hosting a last 8, the money to be made from playing in the semi-final, playing in a final, is astronomical compared to what the currency is currently in South Africa. When is that penny going to drop on coaches to say, yes, you want to do one in the URC, you want to win it, but you only need a top 8 finish there to get into the Investec Champions Cup. But that is the one you want to win. Mm. That's the one that defines you in the World Club pecking order. And that's the one that's going to give you, as a club, a lot of cash to build depth and build a squad that can be competitive in your domestic competitions and win the Investec Champions Cup. Because this competition has no place for any team sending second teams abroad.
Mm.
You're not going to win it like that.
Mm.
When does that penny drop? Mm. Is it a case of when players say, we actually don't want to play in South Africa anymore, we want to play in Europe, we want to play for Toulouse, we want to play for Saracens, we want to play for Bath and actually win that star post the 2027 World Cup? I think we're on a slippery slope here if we don't start taking the Investec Champions Cup seriously.
Mm.
And when I say seriously, we can pay lip service and say we want to win if we respect the competition, as Dobbo said. Then you can't send a team like that to Harlequins when you're in a position to top the table.
Yeah, so I think in South Africa, regardless of what the numbers say, I think people in South Africa measure themselves against their rivals in South Africa. So if you're a fan, you want to be supporting the best South African team in the competition. Ideally, you want that team to win the championship, but you can live with it. If your team finishes sixth in the URC and the other three South African teams finish below sixth place, you can still sleep at night if you're a fan, you know? And so I think that drives a lot of the campaign thinking in South African rugby. Definitely, the closer we get to serious professionalism, the more the dollar is going to make the decisions. I also think you need to factor in the probability. You and I have spoken at length about how difficult it is to win the Champions Cup, because it is such an arduous campaign played over such a long period of time where you are vulnerable to developments in real life affecting your campaign. And so your probability of winning the lottery is very low. The reward is massive, right? But all of us have day jobs, because even though we're banking less cash every month, we're sure of that cash. If we put everything we own, we still up the house, and we put it all into the lottery, we don't win, then we've got nothing. So I think it's the balance between chasing what is that lotto victory, winning that star in the Champions Cup, against the certainty of, look, if we can dominate the SA Shield and be in contention for the URC, you know, that is job done for a lot of the stakeholders in South African rugby.
Well, when you look, we're into the 31st year of the Investec Champions Cup. 13 clubs have won it, just 13.
Wow.
And only 8 have won it more than once. So that just tells you how difficult it is. Toulouse, 6 times winners, consistently one of the best teams in France and in Europe. Leinster, 4 times winners, and then the likes of Toulon and Saracens, they had a great patch where they won it 3 times in a row, Toulon, with all the South Africans in it. And then Saracens also won it 3 out of 4 years. It is hell of a difficult to win. But when you get a quality squad like the Bulls in terms of players, the kind of squad that Dobbo has been developing, and when you look at the Sharks and you look at their top 25 players, we should be top 8. Consistently in the Investec Champions Cup, with the potential of one of our teams to be hosting a top 8 game and kind of being there at the end. I think, you know, the Challenge Cup, when the Sharks went into the Challenge Cup, put their Springboks in and then went on a roll, won at home in the league, went to the Stoop. Mazuka kicked that late penalty to beat Clermont, which was a very good win. Clermont were playing well that season. And then destroyed Gloucester in the final. You'd think the sense, even though the big dance was the next day, the sense of being there on the Friday night at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, getting that win, getting a hint of what it means in Europe. We saw Bath win the Challenge Cup last year, and Jan van Kraan said, we want to be in the Saturday game. We want the big one next season. We've won the Prem. We've won the knockout domestic competition. We've won the Challenge Cup. Now, that's the mentality I want to see with our big three South African teams. And no disrespect to the Lions, because they're not playing in the competition.
Yeah.
So when I talk Sharks, I talk Bulls and Stormers. That determination and then the action of saying, we do want that star and we're capable of going to the north of Spain and actually getting something. Because the more successful you are, the more money there is, and the more you can lure one or two marquee players to your city. I mean, already the Leicester Tigers game, I think it's on 20,000 tickets sold. Brilliant. That was before kickoff.
Brilliant.
Against Harlequins. 54,000 people for the derby against the Bulls. A Bulls team that had lost five in a row before that game. Now, you get 11,000 at Loftus. You get 7,000 at Loftus. There are issues there that they've got to address. Something is not right in Rome. It is burning. But we were awed by the physicality of the Bulls against the Stormers. This North versus South derby, 8-all with 2 minutes to play. Both those 8-all teams conceded 61 points this weekend against English opposition. The Prem that you just said, you don't rate it. What does that say about us?
A lot. A lot. Two words, a lot.
It's not take a lot.
Yeah, mate, look, obviously that has to turn around. And I think the desire to win that competition is very high. I think everybody wants to be there. They just don't know how to get there without blowing something up at home. And so I think it's about finding the right balance. And I hate using that word because it's a euphemism for I don't really know the answer. But they do need to find the right balance in terms of managing the campaigns. And it is tricky because South African teams are rated by overseas clubs for players perennially. You know, they've got the exchange rate behind them, they've got cash. You know, we're blessed with an abundance of players in this country, but it's tricky to keep a strong, good team together for a long period of time. So you're constantly growing new players, and you need squad depth to be able to compete on both of those fronts. It is a very long season. It feels like it doesn't end. And one season bleeds into the next almost, especially if you're a Springbok. So there are a lot of factors that play into it. And I think as much as it is disappointing, we do also, I don't think it's an easy exit, an easy excuse to say South African teams are learning about how to manage competing for a European Cup championship and the demands of that. And we're not sort of historically the most, progressive in the sense like we're not big risk takers, right? South African psyche in rugby is very much, well, you know, you dance, we'll watch, and then we'll see what happens afterwards. So it's not so much, you know, balls to the wall. Let's see if we can score the most tries. Historically, that hasn't been our mindset. And I think from an administration point of view, you can kind of see that in how we're approaching the Champions Cup. And we're learning some lessons here the hard way. But I wrote it years ago, and I still believe it. A South African team will win the Champions Cup. And I've said we're coming for all. We've got the World Cups, mate. The Champions Cup is on the radar.
Well, if it's not a South African team, it could definitely be a South African coach. Because while it didn't go very well for our teams, the South African clubs, three defeats, Glasgow Warriors, Franco Smith's team, coached by a South African, captained by a former Stellenbosch University Griquas winner, now, obviously, all Scotties, Carl Steyn. Yep. They're 3 from 3, Glasgow. They went to France and they won. They beat Clermont. Clermont are 6th. Haven't won. They're -70. They go to Durban. That's a game that the Sharks should win.
Well,
and that could put them in contention to potentially end 5th and then get that place into the Challenge Cup. But it looks unlikely that they will go through in the Investec Champions Cup. Interesting there is that Saracens, so you've got Sale Sharks, 11. I don't see them going very far in the competition. Not after that performance against the second string.
No.
Hollywood Bet Sharks. You got the Warriors 15. They've already qualified. Sale Sharks have qualified on 11. Saracens on 10 points after that great win, 2014 against Toulouse.
Yep.
Toulouse played 3-1-1, a 24-point differential, 7 league points. You haven't seen that before, then it's Sharks and Clermont. The most tightly contested one is Pool 2. Johan van Graan's Bath. They top the table. You've got six teams there. We've got one round to go, and not one team has qualified yet or is guaranteed qualification.
Wow.
You've got Bath on 11 points, Edinburgh on 10 points, Toulon on 9, Munster on 6, Gloucester on 6, and Cast on 5. We'll chat in more detail later this week about that pool, but
yep.
So important for Johan van Graan's team to go to Cast and get the win. And they took their full strength side, and then Munster denied by a penalty 5 minutes from time. Toulon win at the Stade Mayol. So when you see those kind of games and you see the Bordeaux, Northampton, even though it was a blowout for Northampton, they sent their strongest team. And you see the Toulouse Saracens, Leinster, La Rochelle sent their strongest team. That's the quality of the Investec Champions Cup. When you see strength against strength.
Totally.
As opposed to these 60-point blowouts. And yeah, I mean, the Bulls game, everyone's raving about it up north because it was just a 110-point thriller. We're looking at it very selfishly from a South African perspective, saying no team should score 49 points at home and lose. Going into Pool 3, that's the one that the Stormers were dominating.
Yep.
It's now Leinster and Harlequins are qualified. Leinster 14 points. Again, an 81st-minute penalty from Byrne to get Leinster out of jail at home. That result surprised me.
Yep. No.
What did you think of that?
No, very much so. I mean, it went down to the wire. It went absolutely down to the wire. You don't really know. I mean, Leinster have sort of been up and down this season, struggling to find some continuity there. And I suppose, you know, that's very telling. And then La Rochelle, you need them to beat Harlequins this week at home if you're a Stormers fan, just to help with your seeding in that pool.
Yeah, and you just need the Stormers to definitely knock over Leicester Tigers.
Of course.
Because worst case scenario, Leicester win, Stormers lose, boom. La Rochelle win. Stormers end fifth.
Stormers win the Challenge Cup, baby. Let's go.
That shows how incredibly quickly things can change.
Yeah, no, it's true.
This time last week, we were all pomp and ceremony about the Stormers, gung-ho about the Bulls, cautious about the Sharks. One result later, and you go from first potentially to fifth. So that's the pressure I spoke about early on. The Stormers didn't need this kind of pressure week. They've got it now. They've just got to respond. They respond, they get the win, and then all the risk was worthwhile, even though the battering that the Cubs brand takes isn't worthwhile, not when you concede 61 points. Maybe they should just never play at the Stoop again.
Mate, that is a bit of a bogey venue for
53-16 and 61-10. Send Marty's. And then in Pool 4, my favorite team outside of South Africa, Bordeaux Bègles. 3 from 3, 15 points, 23 tries, points differential, 64. Bristol Bears, they did surprise me. 14 points, 3 from 3.
Again, Bristol surprised themselves, mate.
62 differential, 21 tries.
Yep.
The Saints, hanging there, they got the bonus point, 11. They've qualified. By getting that bonus point, they qualified as well. That was a very important one. Pollard got it for them in the end. Two of the four tries. They're on 11 from 3. Power, 5 from 3. Scarlets, 2 from 3. And the Bulls, 2 from 3. And I just don't see the Bulls going to Power now and winning. Not after what's happened.
Well, they just need to go and get 2 bonus points if they can, mate. I don't know.
And then into the Challenge Cup.
And into the Challenge Cup and go win the Challenge Cup.
We're great at the Sharks and the Bulls. We're competing in the final of the Challenge Cup.
But that's the thing about it, isn't it? I mean, like, if you win a trophy, it kind of, that season that the Sharks won the Challenge Cup, it papered over a lot of some of the issues that they had there. And people had a good feeling about the Sharks, like this is the beginning of a turnaround.
Didn't they do like a ticker tape parade or something around Durban?
You can redeem yourself there, you know? Oh, listen, full credit to Mazzotti for showing up in Sale, sitting in the crowd and taking his medicine.
He loved it. But I mean, also like full credit for him for kind of being so boisterous knowing he had a second string team there.
Did he know?
I think he picked
it. This is the team.
I think he picked it. But he said he had a wonderful time. The hospitality was good there. Look, I love the Champions Cup because I followed it religiously for the last 30 years. There were so many South Africans who played in it, played well in it. So many South Africans who've won the star. And many of them great Springboks playing for overseas clubs. I just get frustrated when I think something is avoidable. And I felt the Sharks in sale was avoidable. They could have gone there and won. And ad nauseum, I've said it. I just feel the Stormers got this one wrong. They don't get much wrong. Dobbo, to his credit, doesn't get much wrong. Good mates of mine, love him to bits, but I think he cocked this one up badly. Yeah? I know you're not allowed to comment on that because they pay your salary. Just not in agreement. Is that a blink, blink?
The proof will be in the eating of the pudding, mate. Beat Leicester and it's all good.
Yeah, beat Leicester and what? Who cares who went to the stew?
Exactly.
Any positives that you can take from the weekend?
Yes, mate. Let me begin with this. Skyron Tabeni's back on the field. Personal favourite of mine. I thought he had a very good game when he came on. I thought Zach Porthen showed some signs of life there, played really well. Mate, for me, the try of the weekend, I don't know if we're doing Steco.
We are doing Steco.
Okay, the Steco try of the week for me, mate, was Manny Chituka. I've been saying it for years. He's my guy. I think he's going to do big things. The way, mate, he got the ball in space and chose to round George Ford, like he wasn't even standing there, mate. He could have run over him to score the try. No, he goosed and went. Georgie Ford couldn't lay a hand on him, and he scored, man. It was beautiful.
I'm not going to argue with that because I don't think Georgie Ford wanted to lay a hand on him.
Correct.
George Ford was going the other way.
Yeah.
Any way that Manny was going, George was going the other way.
Manny spared his life, man.
But that was one of the highlights of the weekend for the South African teams in the dogged nature of that contest.
Yeah.
There were 16 tries at Loftus, some spectacular finishes, but when you see there's no defense, you always question the quality of a try. Everywhere else, there were some plenty, plenty wonderful tries. For me, Bordeaux put down a big marker.
I want to say Bato Klikani.
I'm going to get
man
to him.
Man in the match, mate. Come on.
I'm going to get to him. I just wanted you to get a bit anxious.
Okay.
Okay. So when you look at the Investec Champions Cups, we're going to get to the EPC on now and the Lions. When you look at, you've had three rounds now, one to go. Seven teams have qualified already. 16 will be confirmed. And as we said, it's the four group winners going into a segment. Then the four who go from second to fourth, fifth, it's all the way down. So that's why we keep on emphasizing why you wanted to end one or two.
Yeah.
It's that home playoff.
You're a division winner, you'll be ranked 1-4, seeded 1-4 in the playoffs. If you finish second in your division, you'll be seeded 5th-8th.
Yeah.
Third, you'll be 9th-12th, and so on and so forth.
Now, if you look at what you've seen, I reckon it's Bordeaux or Leinster. Even though Leinster have been iffish at the moment, do you want to revisit that later? Or where's your leanings at the moment?
Mate, I'm not going to argue with you because you called Saracens, mate, and Saracens are on the up.
And remember, you called La Rochelle when I used to laugh at you and they won two in a row.
Yes, but I think I've lost that mojo completely now because I said Bordeaux and Toulouse are fighting for their lives in the competition in a way. I think those are the two teams that could turn it on in the playoffs. I feel like some of these other clubs are going to be sort of overachieving to get into that final eight or final four. But the real heavyweights, when the lights are brightest and everything is on the line, I feel like Bordeaux and Toulouse are the ones that have the most firepower.
Unless they cancel each other out in a playoff game,
which is a good
possibility.
Indeed.
Looking at the EPCR, the poor cheaters, I feel for Francis Steyn. They have to relocate. They have to play out of Amsterdam. That's where their home games are. They play out of the National Stadium. They sold out over 5,000 people. The snow came. They moved it to another ground. It was cancelled an hour beforehand. The organizers said, "We'll get back to you. Sorry about that, anyone who traveled. And we will look to see when we can play the game again." The cheaters put their feet up and got told, "You've lost the game, 28-0. You've conceded 5 league points.
Shame, mate.
Or if you go to Paris to play Star next week and then you can go home."
I mean,
those poor bastards can't catch a break.
They just cannot. They just cannot. That is the worst possible result for them. They only play 4 games a year. They just lost 25% of their schedule. I mean, help them. No, it's terrible, mate. I would love to see those guys find a way into Super Rugby or something. Cheaters need to be playing every single weekend. They need some money and they just need to go on the up. It'd be lovely to see them doing their thing again.
The Cheaters should go and form a franchise with a Western Force.
No.
In Perth.
No.
So their home games are between Bloomfield and
you're
Perth.
Talking to a union that didn't do it well with the Lions to make the Cats. That was just up the road. Now you want Perth.
Let them go be based in Perth and they play as the Western Chiefs. Or the Forceful Chiefs.
Yeah, exactly.
But looking at the Lions, you called it. You said Lyon Lou, Lion, there will only be one Lion, will be the home team. I flicked over 28-7. I thought, Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse, mate.
Went on to flash score and saw that they won in the last minute. Yeah, 35-30.
It was close.
35-33, gaining to the last minute. 42-33.
Yeah.
But your lad, he did the business. Eh?
Mate, geez, late change, had to start, and then was powerful and immense. One man in the match. Bartu's going to be great for them, mate. Yeah, I could see a situation where maybe they move Ruan Fenter to the second row and a Bartu starting on the blind side with Frankie Horn there. I think he is a behemoth. He's an absolute monster, power pack runner. Very excited to see what the future holds for him.
Well, it keeps the Lewis alive. Just it keeps them alive. All be revealed this weekend. I know you're going to have an interesting week at the HBC. Or as Dobbo said, what can you take from this game? In his interview on Prem TV, he said that I've got a first 15 waiting at home. Thank goodness for that. All I've got to say to the Stormers, I know that the rivalry with the Bulls is big, but I really don't get the mentality that anything the Bulls can do, we can do as well. So when the Bulls ship 61 points, I really don't expect the Stormers to ship 61 points.